This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest, the podcast which brings you reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went straight to DVD, Blu-ray, or streaming media. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me this week is Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
And Stephen Lockridge.
Hello, everyone.
And this week we have an embarrassment of riches for you. We're going to kick off with the Russian sci-fi thriller Sputnik. Then we're going to dive over to Poland for a bit of Fast and Furious action with Race Fast. Then we're going to meet Thomas Jane, who has A Hunter's Moon. And then we're going to pop over to Indonesia for Message Man. Our short shot this week is Gambit Play for Keeps. It's a Marvel fan-made film. And our DTV throwback is The Assault. So, without further ado, let's crack on. Our first review, then, is Sputnik. Tatiana Klimova is a Russian psychologist who is invited to consult on a cosmonaut who is suffering from amnesia following a disastrous return to Earth, which has resulted in his co-pilot's death. Taken to a remote military facility to meet the cosmonaut called Konstantin Veshnyaklov, Tatiana is quick to provide a diagnosis, but before she can leave, she learns that both Konstantin and the base she is in harbor some otherworldly and deadly secrets. I'm going to throw this straight over to Steve.
When I watched the trailer and then saw the film, it was not what I was expecting at all.
So what were you expecting?
You know, when it started, it kind of like reminded me of, remember Life?
Yes.
The Ryan Reynolds one. It's like the beginning of this was the end of that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I can't, you know, I kind of expected like a aliens hunter type thing or something very schlocky. And it's a lot more nuanced than that, a lot more. It's got more of an emotional heft, and it's not mud and guts and guns blazing, and you know, a kind of thing. I thought it was a lot more dramatic and not melodramatic, but you know what I mean. It's more story based than just action, you know. And that's, I was quite surprised in that, and yeah, I enjoyed it for what it was.
Did you sort of have a bit of trepidation going in then? Because, you know, you're not a fan of horror films as such, are you? I mean, you're a bit sort of worried about, especially when things get a bit sort of overly gory and things, you know, were you sort of expecting to go that far?
Be honest, I did kind of expect it to go a lot further than it did, because there's not much blood and guts and gore and stuff. There's a couple of little bit of scenes, but nothing too bad. Yeah, I'm not a fan of just gore for gore's sake, and you know, you know, stuff like Hellraiser and stuff like that just doesn't interest me or things like that. But like I said, this had a lot more thought behind it, a lot more nuance. There's one subplot that I didn't really see the point of.
To be fair,
it didn't really add anything to it, and don't know, it seemed a little bit pointless to be fair with that bit, but no, all in all, it was pretty damn good. I like the effects, and I like the way that a lot of what you think you might see is shown in like the heat vision,
yes,
or, you know, the night vision goggles. So, obviously, that's a good way of working around the budget, I thought. But the creature effects were fantastic,
yeah. Rich, your thoughts on this?
One of the things that struck me when I was watching it, apart from the fact that, you know, it's obviously got that that kind of plot that's been used in films like Quatermass and Species 2 and stuff like that, but it was the fact that there were so many thematic similarities or structural similarities to 2099, The Soldier Protocol, which we'd only just watched very recently.
Yeah.
Got another a bloke who's being held against his will and basically experimented on. a female scientist who's been brought in because they think, you know, based on some previous experience or whatever, or previous knowledge of stuff she's done, that she's the right person for this dubious work that they want her to do. And then, you know, they develop a relationship, a kind of sort of end up in developing a relationship. I mean, more so in this than in 2099. Mm. But they're in this secret facility. There's an escape element and all that. So there's so many bits that were the same, which I thought was quite interesting. But apart from that, in terms of the general structure and tone and everything of the film, I really liked it. The design and the creature effects and the aesthetics of the film and everything are brilliant. It's very well played. I did really enjoy the bit towards the end when it all goes Predator 2, or Aliens. Yeah, yeah. Kind of, you know, when basically you've got the soldiers all there and it's kind of the you kind of expect Gary Busey to come in and sort of talk about the lions, the tigers, oh my, and all that sort of stuff. Because it all just goes completely pear-shaped, as it always does in these situations. So that was quite fun. But for the most part, the film is not bombastic or in any way. And even the horror stuff is kind of underplayed. There's some really quite extreme moments of, like, you know, bodies just being, like, ripped apart and stuff. But it's there's not a huge amount of that. The creature itself looks like... looks kind of like the Cloverfield monster crossed with Stranger Things. And I don't know if those influences are kind of intentional or not. I did think the score really reminded me a lot of The Dark Knight and even a couple of other films, I think, especially like the music over the end credits. I was just thinking, I know this from something. I was thinking it was Summer of 84 or something like that. But I did like the music, but it did seem very derivative. But the biggest puzzle for me was why it was called Sputnik. I just couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it's because it is it's the one thing we haven't mentioned yet is the fact that this is a period film as well. It's set during the 80s, during the USSR as well. So, I suppose.
But you think Sputnik, you think like the first people, its first, you know, journeys into space and stuff, don't you?
Yeah.
You don't think it doesn't seem to fit 1983 when this, maybe they were, maybe it was called Sputnik when they went up in 1983. Maybe there's a factual reason. They never mention it. And they never say it in the film or anything. And it just sort of seemed a bit.
I suppose it's as good a title as any, really. If you're going to sort of.
I think that title sets up expectations that the film doesn't meet. For me, anyway, because when I was like, "Oh, Sputnik! Oh, it's going to be all about the space race and stuff like that," and then he was like, "Oh no, it's actually a 1980s bunker horror story kind of thing." It's like, "Oh, that's not that." I would have preferred a more alienish title, really, personally. But Sputnik does highlight the fact that it's Russian. I suppose that's one thing, and it is a Russian film. It is subtitled, so
yeah. Oleg Karpachev is the guy who composed the music, and I thought he did a bang-up job on this.
Did you feel it was derivative, though?
I didn't, actually. I just found it really striking and really, really fit the film really well. It's the one thing I made in my notes is a stunning soundtrack on top of everything else. Yeah, I'm totally agreeing with you guys. I think this was very good. It is more nuanced than you might expect. There's more going on than you might expect as well. I agree with Steve. Yeah. I don't think it really needed the subplot with the boy as much.
How did you feel about the ending? Because it kind of feels like the movie reaches an end point and then has this long epilogue, which for me didn't really satisfy.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Like I say, it wasn't needed. It just...
Yeah, it was two scenes too long, really. But other than that, this is a very solid, very enjoyable creature feature in Russian, but, you know, easy to follow. Great characters. Definitely recommended by us, I believe. So I'm going to score this an 8. Steve?
I'll give it a 7.
I was going to go for a 6, but I might join you on a 7.
Really? Okay. So, harsh reviewing by Steve and Rich on this one. So,
I don't think it was harsh. I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it. I thought it was good. I just thought, I liked a lot about it. I just thought it was all very derivative. That was all. It's just there wasn't enough that was unique and novel about it. Everything that's done is done really well. And you could say the same about, you know, many other films, particularly Hollywood movies and stuff. So it's not a bad thing per se. Mm. It's just, it didn't, you know, when I was watching it, I wasn't reaching for my notebook every 5 seconds to write something down. I was kind of just sort of going with it, and it was fine. And I wrote a couple of notes down, but that was it. But a lot of the films we watch on this show, you know, I'm making notes every 5 seconds. There's lots of stuff that I'm really interested in. And this was kind of more like, yeah, it's fine. Yeah, it's enjoyable, but it's just a few, even the standout moments are more standout because they remind me of something else.
Sounds like I spoke too soon. Okay, so that is a 6, a 7, and... Was it 6 and 7? Or did you say 7 in the end?
No, I've gone up to a 7 now.
All right, so 2 yeah. 7s and an 8 for Sputnik. Our next review is Race Fast. Cuba is a gifted race driver who takes part in an illegal race to try and raise money to help his ailing sister. He unfortunately loses, but instead makes some important friends in Chris and Max, who offer him some illegal and dangerous ways to make a lot of money. Okay, so this is a Polish film. It goes by the title Diablo, as well as Race Fast. And on the face of it, you know, this is a it's a Fast and Furious copy, basically. But it's a bit more...
No, it's not at all. It's completely its own thing.
Of course it is. But, I mean, you know, watching this, and I must admit, I got pretty engrossed by it, and I got into some of the characters. But, you know, there comes a point where you're thinking, exactly how close are they sort of following the Fast and Furious slash Point Break slash God knows whatever sort of blueprint? And the main character, Cuba, you're watching him, you're going, is he a cop? Is he undercover? Is his cover going to be blown? Is anyone going to find out? Is he really? And all the way through the film, I'm sort of waiting for that sort of like, you know, that penny to drop or but does it? Who knows? Similarly, there's a particular character in here who sort of about three quarters of the way through the film gets offed, off screen though. And for the rest of the film, I'm like going, shit, did they really kill him off? You know? And there must be, it hangs on to the last, you know, the last scene before you find out whether or not he is truly dead or whatever, you know, because he's never mentioned for like quite a while. But there you go. Yes, as you can tell, I really like this. This is a very good, slick cash in on the Fast and Furious franchise. I think it comes up with some interesting characters, some interesting bad guys, some interesting side characters to deal with. I really like Max. What can I say? I thought he was actually, you know, and it was nice to sort of see a character like that who is a genuine friend rather than someone who's going to stab him in the back or something, you know, sort of at some point in the film. So yeah, I must admit, I got a lot out of this. Rich.
Excellent. Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot as well. But say, like we were saying in the first review about Sputnik, how it was quite derivative and that. Well, this is a perfect example, because this is just, you know, lock, stock and barrel, a retread of Fast and the Furious with Polish speaking performers and stuff. Even the setting and everything, there's not a huge amount that's distinctly Polish in the retelling of the story. Mm. You do get we're going back to the original Fast and the Furious, yes, rather than the sort of the more bombastic, more recent ones. But yeah, you essentially take that film, the Point Break knockoff, take out the cop element, action element, and just make it more, you know, this is a guy who's trying, the motivation for his character is that he's trying to raise some money because his sister needs an operation. Although that is really barely, touched upon throughout the film. They remind you of it every now and again.
Yeah.
But it's like the most they do not build on it at all. It's just a little bit of legitimacy to sort of explain why we should be on this guy's side for, you know, but going
they,
and doing.
You know, they could have really laid on the schmaltz and had her like in a hospital bed and like, you know, with the intravenous drip and everything like that, but they don't. You know, she's out and about, she's playing chess, and you know, it's like, yeah, don't worry, I don't, you know, I know you're trying and everything. So that was quite amusing. There is one.
The scenes don't last too long as well, do they?
Yeah, no, exactly. But there is one innovation to this, which I thought was actually very cool and beats anything that the Fast and Furious has actually come up with, and that is the concept of this race that they're actually in. What was it called? The Black Sheep? Black Sheep race?
Wolves?
Wolves? Yeah.
Something like that. Oh, they're the wolves. But yeah, I felt that. I felt the same because that was those. Those chase, they're not even really chase sequences. They're like games where they're using the cars and they're trying to like box each other in, and then they have to sort of eliminate them from the game. I did like that. I thought that worked really well.
So the idea of this sort of Black Sheep game is that it's held over three separate events in three different locations. And there's three drivers, and it's a case of who can last the longest against the four wolves, these other drivers in sort of souped up cars, who are sort of chasing them down. And it's not even a case of crashing into them or trying to kill them mostly, but it's just a case of making them stop. You know, once you stopped, you're out basically. And it is really interesting. It's a really interesting way of sort of, you know, bringing something new to the whole racing thing.
Yeah, and also it's important to say, I mean, I've seen a lot of these Fast and Furious kind of cash-ins. There was a Russian one called, like, basically just called Street Racers, which didn't really have a lot going for it. This one's really slickly shot. If you want action, you know, the action, sort of the car racing scenes and stuff, and good quality cars and that, you get that. Anything that, you know, the Fast and the Furious fans would enjoy about those movies, you get it here. All the same stock characters are even there. You get the same basic guys and stuff. But it works really well. I think that the translation of the material to the Polish settings, there's not a lot of novel apart from the fact that you get shots of local, you know, Warsaw's Palace of Culture as a sort of landmark to sort of tell you where you are and the language. But apart from that, this is completely accessible to anyone who enjoys these, the Hollywood versions of these stories. Red Line, we've talked about a few episodes ago. It's got a similar kind of thing going on with the high stakes gambling aspect of, you know, it's not just having the street races, it's having these, like you say, these games, they're, you know, cameras left, right and center, and rich people sitting around in the main bad guy's house. The main bad guy also happens to be the father of the hero's love interest, so there's a bit of drama there, obviously. And it's very fast paced, really good. And at the end, you get sort of a typical ending, but we get a nice little setup for a potential sequel as well.
That stupid volleyball scene, right at the end, the volleyball scene, where obviously none of them could play volleyball. You know, they don't even show anyone actually touching the ball. They're just sort of lunging forward, and then it cuts away to somebody else, you know, laughing or something. It's like, oh god. but other than that, it's fun. It's a very fun, action-packed film. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I'll tell you what I thought was funny. It was like in the first 15 minutes, he's gone to this race, he's lost, but then his car's gone to this mechanic, and the mechanic just takes to him straight away and says, hey, you know what? I reckon you're a really good driver. I'm going to go and introduce you to a friend or whatever. It all goes off like that. It's like, what? why would this guy just suddenly do this for him? But it's a bit like in Tokyo Drift.
Yeah.
You know how this guy, he arrives in Japan, and within like 20 minutes, he's got a best friend, he's got a girlfriend, you know, some love interest or whatever, he's with the gang. They set it all up like in the quickest way possible, just so that you can get to all the actions.
Oh, yeah.
So that's quite amusing. But it's very entertaining. Highly recommend it. Now, I want to mention the fact that this is being released under two titles. Mm-hmm. So the when we watch the screener, it's... what was it called? Diablo. I can't remember I know the original title translates as Race for Everything. The Ultimate Race. So they're releasing. Right. They've released it online. digitally as The Ultimate Race, Diablo The Ultimate Race, but on DVD, it's coming out as Race Fast. Now, I did ask them about this, and the idea seems to be that online, they're kind of hoping for the recognition from the Polish audience, that right. they'll find the film under that original title. But on DVD, they're taking a different approach for
a new audience,
non-Polish market, the domestic, English English language market. They're just trying a different approach. So, which I think is kind of a shame, because the original artwork's really good, and the title's quite novel. Whereas the artwork that is being used for the Race Fast release is really generic.
Yeah,
it's just like a picture of a car and stuff. It looks like an Asylum movie, basically.
Ah, did you know that Asylum have their own Fast and Furious movie coming out?
Oh, they've had loads, haven't they?
It's a new one, yeah.
There was that one with DMX recently.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm thinking of.
So there's the DMX thing they've done. There was one called The Fast and the Fierce or something like that.
Yes,
and it was,
which had nothing to do with the car.
To do with the car. It was all about
being stuck on an airplane or something.
Yeah. That was like the most disappointing, thing ever, really, compared to what they were sort of pitching. But that's the Asylum for you, really.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, this film, I would definitely, I think they should have used the original poster artwork and stuff. I think it's really striking. The characters are all really interesting to look at and that. And look it up, whether you find it on DVD or online as yep. Diablo. It's well worth a look. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. I would give it an 8, but I'm just dropping it down a point because it is just so derivative. It's not really anything original about it.
I'm going to join you on a 7. I thoroughly enjoyed this. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Check out the trailer. We'll put it in the footnotes as usual. So, yep, check it out. Our next review is Hunter's Moon. After moving into their new isolated home, already notorious for being the site of a couple of grisly murders, three disgruntled teenage sisters find themselves home alone and decide to party with a local bad boy and his brothers, not realizing that these scruffy ne'er-do-wells were planning to rob them, and worse. Okay, so this co-stars the likes of Thomas Jane, who plays the sheriff, and we also have Jay Moore, playing the father of these girls, who has moved them up into this sort of new home without telling them about its grisly history, apparently. And then him and his wife have to go on a business trip and leave them alone for the evening. And these guys sort of basically invite themselves around. I'm going to throw this to Steve to begin with.
Not great. It had moments, but when it starts off, it all seems very, the performances seem very jolty, and it doesn't seem to flow at all. And then you've got the two supposed big twists, which you can see coming a mile off as soon as it starts, you know what's going on. Slightly disappointed. It just moves from scene to scene. There's no flow with the film whatsoever. You know what's coming, you know what's happening. I think the only really decent performance to get was Thomas Jane. I think everyone else was just slightly off. It was very, very weird. didn't click with me at all.
Rich, what do you make of Hunter's Moon?
I liked it a lot. It's one of those films that you don't want to say too much because you don't want to give anything away, but
yeah,
thematically and similarly, it ploughs a very similar furrow to We Summon the Darkness, which came out a couple of months ago or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But it touches very closely on similar themes. Does a lot of similar stuff. But even though I knew where things were going, it was, there was enough there were enough quirks and uncertainties about it all that it kept me interested. Even though I knew what was going, I had an idea what was going to happen. I still liked the characters, and I was interested in what was going on. So at the start, you've got, at the very start of the movie, we get a Sean Patrick Flannery cameo, which just making me think, you know, the older Sean Patrick Flannery gets, the more I like him. He's kind of getting more weathered and stuff, and a bit like in, because again, we saw another film with him recently.
American Fighter.
American Fighter.
He's a DTV stalwart. So I did enjoy that appearance from him. But then we get Jay Moore and his family coming in, and there's just something not right about him from the get-go, and especially the dad. He's kind of, there's this moment where he kind of seems like he's gonna like completely lose it or something. So you're like, oh, has he got like mental problems or something? We're not quite sure. That's Jay Moore, who's also a producer on the film. But his wife is Amanda Wiss. Did you recognise her?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, so it was great. From Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, we're a long way away from that, so it was nice to see her. And it's quite a good meaty role for her as well, which I enjoyed. So we see them and their daughters. It's a typical old thing, you know, they're arriving in a new town. You get what I was just writing out, the convenience store exposition. Yeah. Where you know you arrive at the shop, and there's somebody in the shop who tells you about that's where that murderer lived or whatever. You know, you don't want to go there. You know, it's kind of, you either bump into someone outside in the gas station, or you see someone in the shop. So so we get that, it starts off. It's got quite a bland look. It's not that interesting. It's quite low budget. But then I don't know, it kind of takes a turn. It doesn't, you can tell it doesn't have a massive budget. So some of the horror elements, I want to say, are more unseen. And I think that works because there's points in the film where you see a lot, and you understand why they didn't show you very much. It's not as good as it perhaps could have been.
So
lots of nice surprises, and there's one bit where a guy gets his he gets stabbed in the hand with his knife.
Yeah,
and it's like he goes for like a second, and then he just has a conversation. It's like it's not even bothering. I mean, he's stressed out. I mean, he's being bullied around or pushed around or whatever, but he's hardly reacting like you would if you got a knife stuck in your hand. He's like He was just like Oh, geez. Oh,
again.
I can't believe you've done that. The original working title of this was The Orchard.
Yes,
and,
that's right.
The Orchard itself actually doesn't play that big of a role, so maybe that's why they changed it. I think the Hunter's Moon title works really well. I'm just going to mention a couple of little trivia bits. Tom Sizemore was originally in the cast, and I think he was supposed to be the Thomas Jane role.
Okay,
I think they got a win
that
there.
Makes sense. Because,
I think they did. I mean, I do like Tom Sizemore anyway.
Yeah, but Thomas Jane's
he's a step up. Yeah,
absolutely, more than a step up. I'd say several steps up. So whether that was to do with they got a bit more financing or something to be able to get someone of his caliber involved, which was good. I know he does a lot of B movies anyway these days. Unfortunately, you know, he had that kind of shining period where he was in Deep Blue Sea and The Punisher and stuff, and then it kind of his star kind of dwindled, you know, it started to fizzle out after that. I don't know why, but he's a really good presence. He gives it all to a sort of a character performance in this, which I enjoyed. But originally the film was going to have a cameo by Henry Rollins, and I don't know why that didn't help, but that would have been awesome. I mean, that would have been a cherry on the cake for me with this. I thought, and it's got a brief running time. It's only about, it's less than 80 minutes minus the credits. So the story is quite fast paced. Yeah. I enjoyed this a lot.
Cool. Yeah, I must admit, I did as well. It was an interesting element to it because it keeps you guessing as to exactly what's going on. We get the setup with the three guys, you know, I mean, they get a good opening as well, you know, in the bar. You know, you mentioned the, the knife through the hand bit where they take this guy down after he'd been all acting tough and everything, and all of a sudden they turn up and sort of take him out. So you know, you're starting to think, oh, okay, these guys are going to, you know, be trouble down the line. But then, the girls themselves keep you guessing as to how much they know and whether or not, you know, you're never really sure whether or not they're in control of the situation or not. You know, and there's a certain amount of innocence and naivety in their actions as well, which is yeah. really cool.
But I thought that was all really well played.
I thought so, yeah. And
so, you know, did it really keep you guessing?
I did, honestly. Yeah. To a certain degree, it did, yeah. Because I think it's because of the age of the girls as well. I mean, obviously one of them is like 18, but the other two is like 16 and 14, I think it is. And you're thinking, okay, so how, you know, because the older girl is sort of acting like, you know, oh yeah, I'm going to invite these guys in sort of thing. And it's like, yeah. is she sort of like biting off more than she can chew here? Because we've seen what these guys can do, you know. But I think my favorite scene in the film is towards the end when the mum is sitting in the car and having a conversation with Billy. You know, and then it all comes together. You know, everything comes together then.
Well, that's the big final exposition scene, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it is. But it's just really cool the way her demeanor changes, because she's like, you know, get in the car, Billy. You know, sort of it's like really concerned and everything, and sort of breathless and you know. And then as soon as she pulls over, her whole demeanor changes, and she's totally in control of what's going on, which I thought was superb. Yeah, no, really, really enjoyed this one. Scores on the doors, guys. So, Steve?
I'm probably going to go with 5.
Okay, Rich?
I'm going to go for a 7 on this one.
Yeah, and again, I think I'm going to join you on a 7. Thoroughly enjoyed this. It's a lot of fun. It is a bit sort of low budget, as we sort of said, and yeah, it could do with a bit more polish. But I thought it was entertaining. I thought, again, you know, there's that interesting sort of spin on sort of your expectations as to where it's going to go. Yeah, so check it out. That's Hunter's Moon.
And stick around for the credits, because there's a mid-credits scene.
Is there? Damn it, I keep missing those.
I must admit, I didn't see that.
I just always assume that the credits are the credits, you know, apart from Marvel. Everything else doesn't, you know, I just think, well, there's the credits. Let's go. Oh, bugger. They need to sort of tell you up front. Our next review is The Message Man. Ryan is an ex-assassin, now a loner sailing around the coast of Indonesia. He finds himself stuck in a small fishing village while he waits for an engine part to be fixed and begrudgingly comes to liken a young boy and his family. When pirates raid the village to kidnap more girls for their trafficking business, Ryan's set of skills rise to the surface and boil over, and brings him to the attention of Lee, who has a score to settle with him. We saw the trailer for this, Rich, quite a while ago. I think it was last year. It's taken a while to come out over here. We liked the trailer when we first saw it. Been waiting and waiting and waiting for this to come out. Did it live up to your expectations?
No. In short, I think that this is an action movie where there's a lot of promise, but I think the editing gets in the way. There's a lot of the fight scenes are over edited, and that was kind of a key problem. The setup is reasonable enough. It's quite you know, the foreigner in a, you know, foreign land, you know, meeting up with people, developing a relationship with the locals, and then you know, being the drama unfolding and him, you know, coming in, getting into action to sort of defend or rescue or whatever, is all, that's all fine. There's a lot of setup. It's a bit of a slow burn at the beginning, because it's kind of like, oh, who is this mystery man? And
it's about, you know, 30 minutes worth. Yes.
Yeah. So really, before I sort of say any more, I'm really kind of interested in what you think, Mike.
It took me a while to get into this. I thought it was way too slow for its own good. The whole thing with the family, It was sending me to sleep. You know, if it wasn't for the fact that we had a couple of scenes with the pirates, sort of showing how horrible they were, to sort of, you know, break the sort of, you know, the drama up a bit. But as, once it got going, it got going. And I didn't have the same issues that you did with this. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed it. I thought there's some really nice artistic flourishes, like there's like an overhead drone shot at night when you can see the muzzle flashes in the alleyways. You know, you're looking down on the village as a whole, and you can sort of see how this this gun battle is unfolding. I thought was, that was really cool. The part when he hires a sniper, when he has to reactivate himself as an assassin and he goes out and hires a sniper, that whole sequence I absolutely loved.
That was quite novel, I thought. In a film that was quite conventional, that is that is something that doesn't normally happen, does it? You know, it's normally the hero, it's the thing. He doesn't normally hire in someone to come in and help him out.
And it was one of those moments as well where you come across them every now and again where a side character could easily carry a film on his own. Because, you know, this guy comes in, he takes this job, and then he's sort of told that, oh, well, your hour's up, it's time for you to move on to your next job. And he realises that, yeah, Ryan hasn't actually finished what he's doing. So he sticks around, he goes on to the next location to help him out. I thought, yeah, okay, so we've got a, you know, this sniper with integrity, which is, you know, quite interesting. You know, he's already been paid for his job. He could easily just jump in a taxi and fuck off to somewhere else. But I just love that little element.
You kind of got that weird bit when he phones up and sort of makes contact with that sort of central server kind of thing. It all goes a bit sort of sci-fi-ish with the big display screens and stuff, which is completely different to the rest tone of the rest of the film, which I thought was the how did you feel about the lead character, Ryan Teller, and his portrayal, or, you know, the casting of Paul O'Brien?
I thought Paul O'Brien was really good in it. You know, he has this sort of like very acerbic attitude at the beginning. But his whole thing is like, I can fix this by killing more people. Yeah, it's his sort of way of sort of sorting everything out. No, I didn't have an issue. Why? Did you?
Well, no, I mean, he's not, he's an unknown for me. I mean, he's an Australian actor from, you know, stuff like Home and Away. Mm-hmm. So if having a look at his IMDb, it seems very apparent to me that this is him really going against type of, you know, really trying to play sort of quite a rugged character rather than sort of like a clean shaven Mr. Nice Guy. And I think he was fine. I'm not sure he's particularly trained in the martial arts and stuff that he was using. Not that that's a huge problem. You know, I never hurt any most other actors. I did kind of think, because you listen to the Australian accent, you kind of think, you kind of hope, imagining what would it be like if it was like, if this was, you know, made back in the day with Richard Norton or something. But yeah, I thought it was quite novel having an Australian action hero. And
Chris, yeah, it was really,
I'd say the action as it unfolds would have been fine. It's just if they hadn't just quick cutted everything and stuff, I think that would have, and all the CGI blood, and that was just sort of really rubbing me up the
I'm used to CGI blood these days, so it doesn't bother me as much as it used to. And yeah, I thought it was handled quite well. The only sort of really silly bit is the bit with the dollars in the club.
What was that all about? Were they bombs?
Yeah, they had a little explosive charge in them.
Well, that's what I wondered. How does that work? I don't know. That was a bit fantastical. But the so we start off the story. He meets up with, you know, even though he's this hardened loner, it takes him like 2 seconds to like, he meets this boy and then he's like, oh yeah, you can come along with me. And all of a sudden he's got like the film reminds me of lots of other films, but Kickboxer 3 came to mind. Do you remember that one?
I haven't seen that one. No.
It was great. Sloan arrives in wherever it is, Thailand. And this boy tries to steal his camera and stuff, money and that. But that they drag that out a bit longer in that film before he sort of develops this bond. This kid, you know, He's like, I'll work for you. And he's like, all right. And he starts working for him. And then his mother, you know, comes along, that just happens to be there and stuff. So they develop this kind of it's a slow burn sort of developing it, but it sort of happens really quickly. But really, what we're talking about here is a John Wick knockoff, really.
No way. Yeah. No.
Totally a John Wick knockoff.
It's not a John Wick
knockoff. But really, it's John Wick crossed with Rambo, and I mean the Burmese Rambo, the fourth one, and definitely Man on Fire. There's a lot of Man on Fire in here. I think the film doesn't equal any of those to a satisfactory degree. I think for an independently made film, yeah, great. You know, Indonesian location, you know, mostly Indonesian cast, you know, quite a triumph really. It's nowhere near anything like The Raid, but yeah, there's some novel aspects to it, but yeah, it was just kind of that. It just wasn't satisfying me. But then again, you know, I'm the guy who's disappointed by Extraction. So
yes, you were. I will never forget.
So don't necessarily, you know, follow me. You know, Mike. You know, Mike's opinion is probably more valid than mine.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. No, I did really enjoy this. I mean, yeah, the first 20, 25 minutes are dead slow, nicely shot and everything, but I don't want to see our hero hanging out with a kid. You know, I want him to rescue the kid, no problem. Don't want him hanging out with the kid, you know, and regaining his humanity and all that crap like Leon and The Man from Nowhere and Extraction and all the others, you know. But there you go. Yeah, I really like this. I absolutely loved the whole sniper bit. You know, from hiring the guy to him deciding to hang around and help out. Even the tuk-tuk driver guy who helps him out, you know, and I loved the final scene, you know, that final scene. I thought, yeah, perfect way to end it, you know. Just so, yeah, there you go. Scores.
I am going to go... I do have a couple of other comments I just want to make before we go, but okay. I've got... I'm going to go 6.
Mm-hmm. What's your other comments? I'm going to go 7 for this. So
7.
Come on, okay. round us up, Rich. What's going on?
Well, I thought it was... have you noticed how many times you watch an action movie or something and the villain lives in a nightclub?
There are a few, yeah. Maranta is another one.
This guy's supposed to be, like, really mega wealthy. Yeah. And he's, you know, he's doing construction projects and all this sort of stuff. And then he's living out the back of this nightclub? I don't know. That seemed a bit strange.
I'm sure it's just one of his many locations.
Yeah. But it was kind of reminding me of, do you remember the Steven Seagal film, Attrition? He was living out the back of a nightclub as well. Sort of similar thing. The villains, sort of, apart from the main villain when they introduce him prior to that, it's kind of the same problem that they had with the Burmese set Rambo film, is that the
bit faceless.
The villains, they're not really characters. I mean, they're just nasty. Nasty local Indonesian people, you know, the worst kind of the worst.
Except you did have a couple of Western contractors in the mix, including one who Ryan knew from his past life.
Yes.
So there was,
and he's quite cold. That kind of established his. He is a, you know, he's a really cold character. He's a cold assassin. You know, so there are multiple points in the story where it's kind of like he could just walk away, but no, he you know, it's like extreme prejudice, you know, kind of thing. There's no compunction about just ending this right now.
There is one aspect I thought was a bit disappointing in. I think I can't remember which character he meets, and it might be that guy, you know, the American guy, who tells him that he's got this new henchman who's Japanese and he's really ruthless, and you know, and you never meet him, or he doesn't, nothing comes of it.
Oh no, we did. I think there's that one scene where he meets him and they kind of have a little quick.
Oh, but he doesn't actually amount to anything because he gets taken out so damn quick.
No, I see what you mean.
He's not an actual threat as such. You know, he's already been assessed. You know, but there you go. So yes, there's a 7 and a 6. I think that was a bit of a harsh 6, but there you go. What can I do about it, guys? Check out Message Man when it arrives. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Our short shot this week is Gambit, Play for Keeps. In this Marvel fan-made film, the mutant superhero Gambit is forced to join a poker game hosted by someone from his past. So we also have a short teaser which sort of leads into this, which is about sort of 3 or 4 minutes long. We'll put the links in the footnotes for both of these. Watch them in order, they're really good. So Steve, your thoughts on Play for Keeps?
Yeah, I enjoyed this. It was really good. Quite campy, nice fun.
Decent action, decent effects. Very surprised when Eric Roberts turned up, to be honest, halfway through.
Really? The guy works for food.
Well, yeah, I know.
Only kidding. We're big fans of Eric Roberts. But he's very
big. Yeah, it was just nice, but I'm just, especially seeing as though it was a fan-made film, I thought they'd done a really, really good job on it.
They must have spent a bit of money on this one. The production values are very good. Because some good special effects, some good actors, as you mentioned. We've got Eric Roberts in there. So they have both Gambit and Rogue. They use her quite prominently in this one as well. It's just a really good film. Really well done, I thought. Rich, how about you?
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I wasn't, you know, I'm not a comics guy and I'm not overly familiar with Gambit. You know, I think he was in, he's been from the X-Men universe. And
yeah,
he is. Work. I think his biggest, his biggest character sort of arc or whatever was in,
Wolverine
or scenes, was it X-Men Wolverine Origins? X-Men
Origins? One scene in that, or one scene.
Oh, was it only one? Yeah, but yeah. I don't think they've done much with him. So this is, to put it in, to sort of paint the picture, so you get fan films, and that kind of makes a lot of people think, oh, you know, quite amateurish, but this is a professional sort of, is a very professional production, kind of more of a proof of concept pitch for a feature film. Theories, whatever they're going for. I don't know. I mean, the guy who directed it, Jensen Nguyen, is a filmmaker. He's done features, including a film called The Perception, which has the same. The guy who plays Gambit, Nick Bateman, was in that film, as was Eric Roberts. So that was made just before Gambit, I think. But yeah, the production values are great. There's enough happening, you know, that one scene leads to another, you know, big, you know, good developments. There's a bit of a slow build up because it's a gambling kind of thing, which made me think of the Blindsided, the game, or Blindsided. You know, yeah, the game, I think, was the main one with the card game and stuff in it. Was establishing that. Yeah, the visual effects are really good. Some of the, you know, some of the costumes and stuff, they just haven't got the, they haven't got the money for some of it. And the accent, Gambit's accent, not too sure on that. But Eric Roberts is such a massive boost to this film. I mean, sometimes he comes in and he's just like, you know, why is Eric Roberts here? You know, he's not really contributing anything. But in this case, you know, he's full in. He's all in, as you would say. With this little performance of this key character of this nemesis for Gambit in this short. So yeah, I liked that a lot.
Cool. Yeah, I totally agree with you guys. This is very well done, very well produced. Quite like the lead guy as well as Gambit. He's a difficult character because I think they've been trying to do a standalone film about Gambit for quite a while, and just haven't been able to do it because I think this kind of shows why, because it'd have to be an R rating, I reckon, if they're going to sort of do it properly.
Well, the rumours were it was going to be what's it called? Channing Tatum, who was supposed to do it. He was trying to produce it and star in it, and I think it kind of really got shelved when Disney took over Fox.
Right.
Because obviously it's the X-Men universe, it would have been a Fox movie. And that's when it's really bit in the dust from what I can gather. But yeah, they were trying to get it off the ground for like 3 or 4 years. They really were trying for a while.
Yeah, because the way they set up his character, he seems kind of, he's more of a, he's kind of an, he's very much an anti-hero. He's like, he's like a thief. It's a sort of, they're saying, showing like he's a thief. And so there's kind of a Catwoman-ish aspect to, you know, so she's a, like, where Catwoman's obviously a baddie, but a goodie at times. And they've kind of got this, what's it got? Malleability with the character, I guess, rather than just being out and out goodie. And I think this is another really good example of one of these great short films or pitch or whatever they are, promo that are being produced by professionals in the industry. Now there's another little short called Skull, which is a bit more like the first Gambit was, which is a bit more of a teaser scene. Or in that case, I think in the case of Skull, it's really more of a trailerish kind of feel to it, isn't it?
It's interesting because when the Skull film is 3 minutes long, including credits, and it starts with a very slow shot of Frank Castle sort of like being pulled away from his wife in this sort of dreamlike sequence. And I'm sort of watching this thinking, what on earth are they going to be able to do in this short time span?
Time span.
And then they do. They cram in this whole fight sequence, you know, which I thought was really well done. I must admit, I really like the costume as well. It's probably my favorite version of the sort of TV/film versions of his costume. You know, the fact that he's wearing sort of full body armor, I thought that was really, really well done. And the fight sequence, it kind of reminded me of the fight sequence with Batman in Batman versus Superman. You know, the fact that he is actually taking some hits, you know, but he's got the body armor to sort of take, you know, take the punishment. I just thought it was really good. It surprised me. You know, started off really arty and sort of out of it, and then delivered a really kick-ass action scene in 3 minutes.
Yeah, so there's a lot of these great films out there, and we covered some of them on this short shot feature. Just before we finish up, there's another Marvel fan film, more typically fan film production, called Cable Chronicles of Hope. Now, Mike, and you and I saw this at the Fighting Spirit Film Festival. It's from a few years ago now, but you can find it on YouTube, and that's well worth a look.
It is. They do a brilliant version of Nightcrawler in that. Yeah, it's really, really worth checking out. Also, if you haven't seen it, you got to check out Laundry Day. Which is the Punisher. Thomas Jane again. Yeah, Thomas Jane as the Punisher. You know, he obviously really enjoyed the role. He wanted to play it again. And Laundry Day is superb.
From Avi Shankar's bootleg universe. And when I'm watching something like Gambit, because it's got that R-rated, you know, 18, you know, our language and stuff in it. Rather than some, I know it's sort of nodding, you know, it's more like Deadpool now. It's kind of more common, but for that, we had the bootleg universe did the Power Rangers short.
The Power Rangers one was
good.
Yeah,
really cracking that.
And that's kind of what this is in the line of. And I think these are really great. I mean, mainstream movie. I don't know, like as you say, with the acquisition of Fox by Disney, whether they're going to start taking those edges off again. I mean, I wasn't a fan of Deadpool personally, but I'm not against these kind of more mature comic book portrayals. You know, especially something like Blade being a really good example, early example of someone doing that. I'd love to see a Blade short film. If somebody would do another one of them, that'd be really good.
I think there was talk of one. Yeah, I can't remember who was. Yeah, they're looking to get take over the role.
One thing that bugged me about Gambit Play for Keeps is that it's got this excellent credit sequence, but the title isn't shown. I hate it when short films do credits and they don't put the title on. Just drives me mad. Can't understand why they don't do it. I mean, sometimes they don't put credits on at all, like the Uncharted one with Nathan Fillion. They just didn't bother put any credits on it at all. But as with this one, as they've gone to such an effort and they've made those really credits, why not put the title? Just put the title.
I don't know.
I know it's a trivial thing, but it's one of those things that bugs me.
Anyway, we don't rate the short shots, so we'll just stick the film onto the footnotes, so check it out. Our DTV throwback this week is The Assault. Stacy is a badass cop who finds herself protecting Tony, a witness to a murder committed by a drug cartel. After a fraught car chase, Stacy takes Tony to her sister's safe house for at-risk women, but it's not long before they are discovered and must survive a bullet-strewn siege throughout the night. This is another film by Jim Wynorski, Rich, someone we've come to
twice before, I think,
be familiar with, quite recently with Stormtrooper that we did a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and Demolition High we also did a while back.
He did the Demolition High movies, did he?
Well, he did Demolition High.
Oh, he did the first one. All right, cool. You're right, yeah.
No, was it Demolition High or Demolition U? One of the two he did.
He did Chopping.
No, it was Demolition. It was Demolition High, yeah. Got me doubting myself then.
Yeah, so we've come across this guy before. That's what we're trying to say here. So Stormtrooper was the one we reviewed recently, which we both enjoyed in weird ways. This is cracking, basically. This is just a really, really interesting film. There's a great, our heroine gets a great introduction when these heavies burst into a strip club where she's pole dancing, where she's working undercover. And it's just a brilliant scene. And she takes these guys out. And it's not until she's taken everyone out that backup arrives and then berates her, going, "No, you're supposed to tell us when to go," or something. But yeah, there's an interesting sort of streak of sort of sexism in this, or sort of, it's a mixture of sexism and feminism. So we sort of see her having to put up with sort of the office politics and all that sort of bollocks when, you know, she's basically carrying the whole department, and the, you know, they're giving her all this sort of like shit about it. It's very strange. But then, you know, the cast, you know, all the protagonists are female, just about, you know, the people at the retreat. I guess it knows some of those as well. And then the action just does not let up all the way through the film. It's it is really, really well done. Rich, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is, you sort of say about the feminism and the sexism, that is very curious mixture. I mean, this is probably about as feminist as a Jim Wynorski movie's going to get, because, you know, he's like Mr. Exploitation. But yeah, it is. It's a domestic violence themed action film with a kind of a siege setting. Basically, it's the exact same setup as Stormtrooper. Mm. They're basically like two peas in a pod. They were both made around the same time. Very similar concepts, but done in a completely different way. So this one is was even written by one of its lead actresses. The actress who played Tony, Melissa Brussell, who's been in dozens of Wynorski's films. Almost exclusively, she works in Wynorski's films. So that was quite interesting for me to see that she'd done that. Leo Rossi turns up, by the way. He's Stacey Randall, who's the lead actress. He's her partner in the cop. Anyway, so it's kind of got this domestic violence theme as the setup. But then it drops it, really. It kind of completely sidelines it in the same way that Stormtrooper did, although I thought Stormtrooper had that nice first act, beginning, middle and end to that that part of the story, which I thought worked really well. But then you get the extra character growth. Here, all the characters are the lead actress is already a strong woman. She doesn't have much of an arc, but it's those around her, the ones she ends up with, who have to become stronger. They're all very vulnerable young women. Except for Tony, who's kind of just kind of the kick-ass one. She doesn't even really want to be in the shelter. You know, she's not really even accepted that she was abused. Kind of a character. So she's quite interesting. Right. Yeah. So they end up there because she's a witness, and the bad guys are going to come after her because because they want to, you know, take out the witness. The problem I've got with the movie is that so they end up at the house, and then there's a big assault scene, but then nothing happens after that. They give them the people inside time to regroup and sort of get themselves together, get weapons and board up, and then they attack again. And there's so many of the bad guys, basically. They're just coming in there. Now, do you remember one of the things you said you didn't like about Rambo Last Blood?
Bullet sponges.
Yeah, people just running into it. And so that's what we get here. You know, they're not fully rounded sort of characters. They're basically red shirts running it out. The bad guy, you see him every now and again, and he kind of G's them up in a very much a Death Wish 3 kind of way.
Yeah,
of just saying, yeah, guys, good gang, we're going to go and get them and stuff. And I just kept thinking, what are you waiting for? Why are they
in the house?
There were like five people in the house. Why didn't they just go in? What were they waiting for outside? Hordes of them with all these guns and stuff.
The other thing which is quite funny about this is the backup that keeps arriving. It's, you know, it's like, we haven't heard from Stacey for a while. Send a car over there, see what's going on. and then 5 minutes later, going, Sarge, we haven't heard back from car 54 yet. Okay, send another car over there, find out what's going on. And then there's like six police cars being sent to this one location. They're going, Sarge, we haven't heard from anyone. Right, we're all going down there, find out what's going on.
Yeah, that was. I felt it was too drawn out, and it didn't make a lot of sense why they were waiting. What were they waiting for?
It was a thread list, basically, is what it is. Now, the bit I
of the Living Dead, I think, was very much a touchstone for it. Yeah. I mean, you've even got hands reaching in through the boards and stuff.
Mm-hmm. There was.
Did you catch that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, there's a scene when I was watching this, I sort of posted it on Facebook. Because when Tony and Stacey arrive at the shelter, there's a guy who becomes sort of quite prominent in the film, who's like an ex-army guy, and he's like the local handyman, and he's using this wood chipper, and the film just keeps cutting back to the wood chipper and then feeding in more wood, and I'm thinking, right, this is obviously Chekhov's gun here, isn't it? You know, it's basically if that wood chipper isn't used as a weapon by the end of the film, then there's something wrong here. So I was quite glad that the way the film ended.
I saw you putting that on, actually. I was just saying.
So yeah, I mean, it signaled it quite well, but I'm thinking I better follow through that there's this wood chipper is going to get used in a sort of very sort of Tucker and Dale versus Evil kind of way.
And did you know, at the end of the scene, you know, we've got that very final moment with that scene. Do you know what that reminded me of? And which I think was a clear influence on that scene.
I'm going to say Terminator.
Terminator, yeah. Mm. I think he's totally imitating Terminator in that scene. Which I think is quite entertaining. It's just a very different situation. But the tension they build up and the strain and stuff. I thought... And that was quite fun, but that's what Wynorski does. You know, he copies other movies and sort of puts his own spin on it. I think, you know, this is a kind of a weird mishmash of like Night of the Living Dead and you know, Assault on Precinct 13 and stuff like that. More modern examples being like VFW But I think there's enough to recommend it. I like the cast. You know, we got Matt McCoy in it. Now, am I right thinking he was in like Police Academy 5 and stuff like that? I can't remember, but he's done quite a few things over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But he's right. But Philip Tan turns up.
Token Asian guy. Yeah.
I like the fact that he turned up. He doesn't get much to do, but I did recognise him and think, hey, that's great, because I haven't seen him in something. He used to be in loads of stuff like Tango and Cash and whatever. And there was a couple of other little points I wanted to say. Right, in the credits, there's a thing that says, I think it's special thanks to Norm Carlin for letting us blow up your house, which I thought was quite nice. And extra special thank you to Madame Zoltar, reader/advisor. So this film had had psychic guidance, psychic consultation in its production.
Awesome. Before we finish with Jim Wynorski, I just want to read out some of the films on his filmography. This guy's got like over 100 films to his credit as a director. But, you know, every now and again he does a film like this and like Stormtrooper that we talked about. But he's mainly known, I think, as, you know, for doing these sort of softcore parody type things. So we got things like The Bresford Wives, House on Hooter Hill, The Da Vinci Coed, Cleavage Field. I thought that was quite clever. The Devil Wears Nada. The Hills Have Thighs. These are all real films.
And he does these under the pseudonym George Blueberry, I think. Because he uses a lot of pseudonyms, a lot of his action films and stuff. Because he churns out so many, they don't like to use the same name on all of them, so therefore they use like Jay Andrews and stuff like that.
But yeah, some great titles.
Yeah.
Oh, The Bear Wench Project, that's another one. Yeah,
I recommend Cheerleader Massacre, that's pretty good.
And as you say, Demolition High, yeah, in there.
He also did he's done absolutely shed
tons.
Something like Ghoulies 4 is also on. This was on Prime. Ghoulies 4 is on Prime. I keep meaning to catch up with that because I've never seen it. But
it was one of his early ones.
All I keep meaning to see. Yeah, I mean, in mind, you know, this is Wynorski in 1998. He'd already been in the game
since '84. Yeah, the director.
So, Chopping Mall was his second feature. And he did Return of Swamp Thing. That was kind of his big movie, as I guess like a big theatrically released thing that probably most people had heard of. I remember that being quite a big video store release at the end of the 80s. He's done like, then, and there's a documentary I keep meaning to see about him called Poppetopolis.
All right.
Which is all about, I think is kind of about his kind of the saucier end of his resume, let's say,
right.
rather than kind of the action stuff. But yeah, he's a very much an all rounder, and I generally always enjoy his films. Very much like Fred Olen Ray, they're kind of almost like two peas in a pod, really, in the kind of films that they make. And this one was a good one, but I had a lot more problems with it than I would usually have with one of his films, which was disappointing.
I thought it was a lot of fun for what it was, and you know, it's always nice to sort of find a new action film or sort of an undiscovered action film from a few years ago.
How did you come across it, Max?
This was, I think it was Matty. What's his name?
Budrevich.
Yeah, Budrevich. Yeah, he mentioned it.
They've done a piece over at the Schlock Pit.
That's right.
I hadn't read it or whatever, but I was wondering if...
No, I hadn't. I hadn't read it, but I saw the poster and I thought, it's on Prime. What am I waiting for?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been on my watch list for quite a while, so I'm glad that we finally got around it. I mentioned Rossi because he's kind of good value in this. He's always around a lot in these 90s movies like the Relentless films and stuff, and he's kind of like this. He's got this effortless kind of wisecracking cop demeanor that he puts to good effect. He's not in the film a huge amount, but he lifts every scene he's in. He recently, as some of you might know, he recently wrote the script or co-wrote the script for Gotti, the John Travolta movie.
Is he actually in that? I can't remember.
In Gotti, he's got a small supporting role in it.
It's interesting that Amazon Prime, you know, has a lot of films like this sort of knocking around, whereas Netflix is great for foreign movies, basically. Whereas sort of Amazon Prime, if you want a sort of a bit of sort of obscure 80s/90s direct-to-video stuff, you know, there's plenty on there, and we'll keep discovering stuff, Sean.
Yeah, I think that is why I prefer Prime to Netflix, because they've got that sort of that archive content, which I think is is really good. I mean, a lot of that stuff's never been released. I mean, The Assault is a good example. We're doing it as the throwback. It's actually never been released prior to, you know, it's essentially a new release in the last, I don't know when it came out over here on digital, but, you know, not that recently. It's never had a DVD or even video release as far as I'm aware. So if it wasn't
good, it's a good quality print anyway. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a good quality version, yeah. Oh, and there's a great car flip in it as well.
Yes, there is, yeah. There's a good little stunt in there. I do, I mean, I keep mentioning, you know, and even going back to talking about Message Man, you know, one of my favourite tropes of films is when sort of the bad guys just totally underestimate who they're up against, you know, and then come a cropper. And then they feel like really aggrieved about it. So I really, really enjoyed that side of it as well. Cool.
She's great. Stacey Randall is really strong.
She's really good in this.
Action heroine.
Yeah. Okay, so that is our episode for this week. So thanks for Rich and Steve for joining me.
No problem at all, sir.
No problem.
Awesome. We had a few issues earlier, but we managed to overcome, which is really cool. The footnotes will be stacked full of trailers and short films for you to check out, so please do tell your friends about us, spread the word, and tune in next time. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.